I love that story of the production of West Side Story when they couldn't find the gun at the end, when he had to come on. So the guy ran on and shouted, "Poison boot!" And then and kicked Tony to death. I don't know if that's true or not, but I freaking hope it is, because that is the ultimate gone wrong story for me. Like,
hello everyone, and welcome to the National Theatre Podcast. I'm Sam Sedgman, and I'll be your host, your tour guide through the trapdoors and tripwires of theatrical disaster. Because today we are talking about things going wrong, the mishaps, the mistakes, the catastrophes, and how we recover from them. It often feels like too much of life is focused on perfection, that we should all be striving constantly to achieve a state of being that's completely flawless in every way. But you know what? Life isn't like that. It's never perfect. We all make mistakes, and the world of theatre is no exception. So today, we wanted to celebrate failures, to share with you some tales of mishaps and calamities, to show that even award-winning professionals at the top of their game have bad days at the office. At the top of the show, you heard the cast of Our Ladies of Perpetual Succor sharing one of their favourite urban legends of disaster striking the stage. We spoke to them last time for our episode about the Edinburgh Fringe, and today we are revisiting some of our other favourite contributors from the series so far. Harriet Walter, Kush Jumbo, Don Warrington and plenty more are back and telling us about some of their favourite catastrophes. Now, I know what you're thinking. This is theatre. How bad can things get? It's not like we're talking about brain surgery or air traffic control. And yes, you are right, the world of theatre is a world of make-believe. But I am always, always fascinated by theatre makers' ability to construct situations for themselves that I would never want to be in. Like Rob Drummond, whose story is about a show where a volunteer audience member is required to shoot him in the head with a real gun, while his mum is watching.
My original volunteer refused to shoot me. So I was panicking at this point. We'd not worked out what to do if the show didn't work, if they wouldn't shoot me.
Just to give some context here, this is Bullet Catch.
This is Bullet Catch, the show in which an audience member comes up on stage and volunteers to be my assistant in the magic show of shooting me in the head, and I catch the bullet in my teeth. So my current assistant on that night wouldn't shoot me, so my mum, I said, "Mum, could you please help me with this?" Because she was in the audience anyway and I'd already spoken to her. She was a character in the room. So she came up, took the gun, and she turned round and aimed it at my father's head in the audience and mimed shooting my dad. Now, of course, it undermines the whole show if I laugh at that, because it's a real weapon she's got in her hand that could do serious damage. Forget the fact it's a magic trick. It could genuinely have done serious damage. So I leapt on her, put her hand in, went, "Mum, you cannot do that. Take this seriously." So she took the huff, not liking to be told off in front of a room full of people, and she said, "Well, I'm not doing it then." And she sat down. So I had to find a third person to come up on stage and shoot me. And at that point, a big, menacing, brooding figure called Alan McKendrick, a friend of mine, his voice comes from the back of the room, "I'll do it, Drummond." And he comes down onto the stage like some sort of spectre of death, takes the gun, points it at me and goes, "So it's come to this, has it, Drummond?" And he has no problem pulling the trigger. So that was a unique show where we had three shooters on stage, and the audience was all over the place, not knowing whether or not this was planned or whether it was meant to be comedic or whether they should really be scared for their own safety. And let me tell you, they should have been.
This was the third performance of Bullet Catch, I think, and yeah, watching it from the back row of Traverse 2, I started to see everything that we'd been working on in rehearsal for the past 3 or 4 weeks falling apart.
This is David Overend, the director of the show.
It was an awful, scary moment, and by the time that McKendrick offered his assistance to shoot Rob, I realised that the audience were so excited and so into it, and I thought, hang on, this is what we're trying to do with this theatre, is create the conditions for failure, to create the conditions for things to go wrong and for unpredictable events to invade the fabric of the performance text. And that's what we've been trying to cultivate ever since.
If you come out of a show and you haven't been scared for your own life, it wasn't a good night at the theatre.
I mean, you said it, but I'm not disagreeing.
There's got to be an element of risk.
When you're doing the same thing night after night, something's bound to go wrong eventually. Some risk, as David says, is unavoidable. But I don't want you to think that the backstage world is some kind of anarchy. This isn't Mad Max. There are an awful lot of people whose job it is to minimise those risks and to make sure that everything goes according to plan.
I'm Andrew Speed. I'm a stage manager, and I look after whichever shows are pushed my way by the National Theatre.
And how long have you been here now?
27 years.
And tell us briefly what a stage manager does. What are you responsible for?
Basically, you are there to help the creatives realise their vision of the show on stage. So you schedule all the rehearsals, you know, very closely with the staff director and the director. You make sure that the calls are correct, that the actors turn up for the scenes that are meant to actually happen. It's very much a sort of people-pleasing operation for the first few 6 weeks of rehearsal. When you get into tech, that's where the business really starts. You make sure that during the technical rehearsal, which is basically when the technicians get their hands on the play, when the sound finally gets fed in, when the lights get put on the stage, you're physically in costume, and you're actually putting the nuts and bolts of the whole piece together to have a sort of a unified play, then it's your job to make sure that all happens. Obviously, very closely with the production manager who's seen the build of the set. So you are very much pivotal at that stage, and you're the conduit in which everything flows, and you have to, like Sisyphus and his boulder, keep pushing it up the hill however many times it rolls down and realise that first preview.
How much of your job is dealing with things going wrong and handling the unexpected? Speaking
Hello.
Of the unexpected.
I'm terribly sorry. I'm doing a podcast at the moment. Can I call you back? Okay, thank you. I'm being recorded at the moment on a podcast. Bye. So what was that about the unexpected?
Oh, my God.
Okay, also, it's my job as a stage manager to tell everyone to turn off their phone before they do anything. Anyway, sorry.
That's fine. So back to the question. How much of your job is dealing with the unexpected and things going wrong?
Well, not that much. Because when a show is really rocking and really good and everyone's on the top of their game, machinery is behaving, the actors are behaving, and, you know, and the gods are smiling on you. Basically, you do show after show after show, which absolutely hits the mark, the people come having paid their money, and it's all fine. And then every so often, there are curveballs, and you are like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. I mean, part of our job is to look at all the possibilities that can go wrong, but you can't legislate for everything.
Part of the thrill of seeing something live is the idea of how many people have worked to bring the thing you're seeing to life. And in part of your mind, the knowledge that all it would take is for one small thing to come unstuck to snap you out of it.
Things go wrong a lot of the time.
This is Don Warrington talking to us about playing King Lear at the Royal Exchange in Manchester.
In King Lear, there would be nights when, you know, in the storm scene, I'd think, well, I've no idea what I'm going to say now. You find a way. I've tried to make up Shakespeare, and the terrible thing was, I looked around. There was a man with the book, and I thought, what can I do if I make it up? He's going to know.
Well, in the audience, with
yes,
the book,
yes,
not the prompt.
No. There was a man in the audience, sitting there in the front row, reading the script as I was doing it.
Why would you come to a play and read along?
Well, that's what I thought.
It's happening there in front of you.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And it really upset me because I was so self-conscious of every word. Consequently, I forgot halfway through. And I thought, I'll just say the line again. And I said it again. And then, you know, there was a kind of pause and it came to me. And he kept looking down at his book and looking up at me. And I'm convinced that he thought, oh, this is how this production have decided to do it. You know, because nobody knows. Nobody knows until nobody knows what the intentions are. You know, you can do anything, and people will go, well, that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do. You know, I may not like it, but it's what they want to do. So, Yeah, there are always moments when I think, oh, I cannot remember a line.
But you said you tried to make up Shakespeare.
Yeah.
How?
I don't know how. In the moment you do anything.
You just sort of go, thee and thou, yeah, and blum-de-dum-de-dum.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of thing.
Make some up now.
I can't. I'm not in this. I'm not panicked. I'm all right here. No, you can't make it up just now. It's when the whole thing's going on, you know, and you know that queue's waiting on you. You've got to do something, you know. And also, people are very kind. Sometimes an actor can look at you and think, oh, he's in trouble. I'll get him out of it. I've done it. I've seen an actor dry. And, you know, you've helped them out. You've found a way of bringing them back to where they should be.
Like, perhaps you'd like to ask me how I'm feeling.
Well, maybe a little subtler than that. Yeah.
Well, I'm not an actor.
You know, but even that works because the audience don't know. You know, even when they're reading the play, they think, oh, they've made a cut. We cut Shakespeare all the time.
Mm. Have to, it's so long.
Oh, yeah.
It's not made for theatres now.
No, I know. People didn't have much to do in the evenings, I guess. So,
yeah,
he kept them busy.
Thank you so much for sharing that story.
A pleasure.
You must get actors going off script a lot, either intentionally or... Yeah. Accidentally.
Oh, yes.
That must be a horrible feeling when you're there and you've got this script in front of you that is the roadmap for how the evening is supposed to go, and someone has gone way off the path and there's nothing you can do to get them back.
Well, you can. You can give them a line.
Just shout the line.
I've done that. But we did the David Hare trilogy in the Olivier Theatre years ago, and Ollie Ford Davis, who was absolutely brilliant... he won awards for his portrayal of Lionel in Racing Demon. He had a few smaller parts in the second play, which was Murmuring Judges. And because he had a massive, you know, the first show was 10:30 in the morning, and he was basically the lead in that. So his roles in the second play were, you know, slightly smaller to give him a bit of a rest. And he played one prison officer in one scene. It was like, OK, McKinnon, come in, stand here, take your clothes off, right, this, that, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he had a clipboard with him. But one morning it went. He just, you know, it just went out of his brain. So he went, line. We called the line, carried on, stopped again, gave him the line again, went, wait there, McKinnon. And he walked over to the book and he tore the page with the scene out of the book, stuck it on his clipboard and walked back on stage. And I thought, now that is really an actor taking a prompt. Physically took it out of the book. But, you know, he's a brilliant actor and he only did it the once. But, you know, I mean, we can all have mental aberrations. I have them all the time.
Yeah, like everyone has those days where they come in and they're just not feeling their job, but it rarely happens that you're in front of 1,000 people.
Well, a few more in the army.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was extraordinary, actually.
It's no wonder actors have trouble with their words sometimes. They have to memorise them and remember them night after night. But guys, even if you have the script right in front of you, reading your lines can still be a challenge. Trust me, I know. Right. Am I good to go? Great. But first, one notable I can't say exploration. Shut up. Stop it. Laughing at me through that glass. But first, one notable Shit, what's wrong with me? I think I've written it slightly wrong and my head's making me go explode or something. Exploration. I'll nail it, don't worry. But first, one notable exploration. Oh, fuck! What's wrong with me? I'm possessed. One notable exploration. Exploration. It's a hard word to say. Thanks to Emma, our producer, for recording that. Thank God you didn't delete it. That would have been awful.
Look, we all have blunders, some of them more public than others. But you know what? Sometimes a mistake live on stage isn't the end of the world. Here's Chukwudi Awuji.
I remember when I was in drama school, I worked for the American Players Theatre in America as part of, it was great because I was in school, but I was getting credit working professionally. And one of the productions we did was Much Ado About Nothing. And I was playing Don Pedro, and Jimmy DeVita, who's a great, wonderful actor, was doing Benedict. And Claudia and I come on stage to make fun of him in the shaving scene. And Claudio, this actor next to me, just can't stop giggling. And it's clearly off script. He's like giggling. I was like, what the hell's going on here? Because I'm one for a joke on stage. But this was like, the guy could not breathe giggling. And finally, Jimmy, who's playing Benedict, is like, what's wrong with this guy? Do you know what I mean? And then finally, Claudio points at Jimmy's crotch. And he was shaving. There's a white foam patch of shaving from right on his crotch. I mean, white. And the whole audience of 1,200 people, whatever it was, had seen it, and they were trying not to notice that. That was the white. And I saw it, and talk about not dealing with it well. I just burst out laughing, and Jimmy went red, looked down, saw it, and held his hands over his crotch, and the whole house lost it. It took us about 6 minutes to get the scene back together because we tried to start and there'd be another wave of laughter. That's an example of when something's gone wrong, but it's actually made the show better.
That would be the best performance I ever saw.
No one is going to forget the night that happened. And the applause at the end of the night, was, it brought tears to your eyes because you were like, oh yeah, remember, we're all in this together. Liveness is that we're all, is not, you have an effect on what happens here and we have an effect on you there. So that was a happy example of how something going wrong heightened, you know, the experience that can only happen in live theatre.
I love this story. But there's a time and a place for laughter. You can't have a cast of actors in fits of giggles when they're supposed to be doing something serious. Have you ever had that uncontrollable urge to laugh at the worst possible moment? Actors get it too. Here's Simon Russell Beale telling a story about a show he was in with Alex Jennings and Leslie Manville.
I don't know what, apparently it was me. I said something obscene before we went on. And the three of us went on to do, and we started the scene, started the whole play eating breakfast, these three criminals. And so it's a blackout, we came on, and then the lights came up and we were supposed to eat breakfast. And then we started with this huge argument, you know, fart in your face and all that. And apparently I said something in the blackout. And the three of us, it was awful. My mum was the first line. And I knew if I looked up at Alex or if I looked up at Leslie, I'd just laugh. We were supposed to be having this huge argument. And there was that awful feeling about, we'll never start this play. We just stood there. We just sat there.
So the lights are on and everyone's waiting for your first cue and you just can't do it. How do you get out of that corpsing situation?
Well, I don't know. I think you just have to go, right, oh, for God's sake, and just shout something at Alex without looking at him. You just can't catch people's eyes. And Richard Bryce, bless him, in London Assurance, who had a line right at the end of the play, which was with the whole company, like this, the plays that always end up with the whole company. I married for love, because it's all about marrying for love or marrying for money. I married for love, and you see how happy it made me. So this is his last line. Instead of which, he said, I married for money. I married for love, and you see how funny it made me. Which was such a giveaway. And there were 20 people on stage.
I want to know if you've ever encountered uncontrollable giggling.
Giggling, I mean corpsing, as it's known in the industry. It's legion and it's very naughty.
Yes, Simon Russell Beale was telling us how he was working on something in the Cottesloe, I think, and they just couldn't start the show because they were all in fits of laughter.
Well, Simon, I've done quite a bit with Simon. I did Simon's World Tour of Hamlet, and that was quite extraordinary. But the story I wanted to tell was when he decided to walk backwards on Candide. I think it was Trevor's first season here.
Trevor Nunn, he's the former director of the National Theatre.
And they put together this, what are they called, where all the actors are together? Ensemble. It was an ensemble company. So I did Troilus and Cressida. And I think with Troilus and Cressida was Candide. And I guessed it on Candide because, you know, we moved around a bit. And there's this bit, he sort of played the narrator. And, you know, Simon's brilliant at that stuff. He's a wonderful, wonderful actor and singer. And there's this one bit where he's telling the story about the journey that Candide went on. And he decided, I don't know why, to walk backwards round this circular edge of the stage. And he fell off and landed in the audience and on this woman's lap. Well, we thought, you know, fair enough, Simon, you learnt your lesson there. And then about four shows later, he tried it again. And exactly the same result. So I think he's improved his walking backwards now. But, having done it once, you wouldn't think you'd go for it again. But he did.
Simon's not the only person to have had trouble staying in the right place on stage. Here's Harriet Walter, proving that even dames have bad days.
Oh, Lady Macbeth, yes. Now, there's a thing. We had a sort of power surge in the middle of Macbeth, the Young Vic, and we had sort of spiral staircase going up the side. I had to run up the stairs in a long dress carrying two knives and run up a spiral staircase. And the lights went, and there was a sort of runway thing between the bottom of the stairs and back on stage. And I wondered why it had gone all soft and spongy. And I realised I was walking on the audience's knees with my two knives.
How did you get out of that one?
I think I probably muttered sorry. It was probably came completely out of character.
You win. That's the best one. Thank you so much. Actors getting into trouble on stage is one thing, but sometimes actors can't even go on at all. We've all had times in our lives when we've had to find someone to fill in for us at the last minute, and there's only a very small number of people who can do the job. When a play loses one of its most important actors, you've got to do some quick thinking. Here's theatre director Cora Bissett.
I directed a show called Glasgow Girls, which was a kind of big, bold musical about a group of teenage girls who fought for the rights of their friends who were being deported. And it was one weekday matinee, I think it was a 10 o'clock show, and I got a phone call from the stage manager about 9:15 that morning, and I was in my bed, I was knackered, and I was like, okay, I'm taking a little bit of a long light today. And they said, all right, Cora, one of our girls is down. We need you to come to the theatre quick. So I'm driving to the theatre going, okay, right, okay, what's our options? What's our options? Right, okay. There was a girl that was on standby for that other character, but maybe she could come in. No, she's in Fife, right. Okay, she's not going to get here for 10 o'clock. Okay, what's my other options? What's my other options? Okay, could the stage manager maybe read from the book? Can we do? No, we've not got enough crew. No, can't cover that. So just as I'm pulling up to the theatre and still trying to work through in my head, what's our fallback plan? Because we didn't have any understudies in place. I come into the technical office and the entire stage management team are standing there just looking at me. And I knew at that moment in time, I was the plan.
As the director, Cora was the only person who knew the show well enough to fill the part. She went on stage in a musical that she had not prepared for with only a few minutes' notice. I don't know about you, but that is literally my worst nightmare. I could not do that. But sometimes, when we're in a bind and everything's against us, we just have to step up to the plate and do what we have to do, no matter what the circumstances. It happens to all of us, even my boss, Rufus Norris, director of the National Theatre. As a director, I know that sometimes when something goes wrong, a director has to step in during the first few shows. I wonder if that's something like that has ever happened to you.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, it's happened several times. I did a production of Cabaret several times, and one of the times we started at Southampton at the Mayflower, which is a big 1500 seat theatre, and this was Will Young playing the MC, and a great cast of people. Sean Phillips was in it, and also London Road was finishing its second run here in the Olivier, so I was going to come back and watch London Road on the Friday night. So on the Thursday after we'd finished our working afternoon, I thought, right, now I'm going to go and have a curry and I'm going to have a pint over with my curry, and then I'm going to watch the show, and then I'm going to get on a train, because I can't even give the actors notes. I'll just, you know, my work was sort of done, but I thought I'd see one last show. So I went to the curry house, had a curry, you know, 6 o'clock, 6:30, had a pint, and then they brought me a double, you know, shot at the end, which was nice of them. So, you know, so I'd effectively had, you know, had my four units, and I thought, I know, I'll go back to the hotel, have a lie down for half an hour, and then I'll go and see the show, because I was feeling a little bit heady. And I went down, and as I hit the, as I lay down in my hotel, the phone went, and the guy playing one of the lead parts, who's the young writer, in Cabaret, had he'd torn all the ligaments in his knee at the half. Anyway, so at 7:15, I was at I was backstage getting fitted up. Our understudy hadn't had a chance to learn the show at all, and I went on half pissed, singing duets with Will Young, snogging various members of the company who I'd been directing even that afternoon. You know, I was the wrong sexual persuasion. I was 20 years too old. I couldn't dance. I can't sing. It was glorious.
Why? Like, what's the logic behind? You're the only person that can do it, I guess. Is that it's, it was that or close the show?
It was that or not do the show, yeah. And what you've got to remember is there are 1,500 people who had come for one reason, and that is Will Young. As long as Will Young's going on stage, they were happy. And of course, you know, Will's fantastic. And the chance to, you know, he said, there's no question about it, you've got to get on, and I can't wait for our duet. Yeah.
When we started talking to people for this episode, we realised this kind of thing happens a little bit more than we thought. Ben Power tends to be involved in shows here as a playwright or as a dramaturg, not as an actor. I understand something peculiar happened to you during Husbands and Sons.
Yes. So Husbands and Sons was a show that I made with Marianne Elliott, and I wanted to do something with these three D.H. Lawrence plays, and we came up with this new way of treating them where they were all woven together. It was incredibly complex, it was highly theatrical, and it went on, and it was great. I was really proud of it, and I loved going to see it. And it was in the Dorfman, which means that there are no understudies. One of the actors in Husbands and Sons was sick, Phil McGinley, who was playing the electrician lover of Anne-Marie Duff's miner's wife. We found out at sort of lunchtime that Phil wasn't going to be able to play in that evening's performance. So, terrible shame. It's all sold. It's a sold-out show. Terrible shame, but we have to cancel, I said. Now, what I didn't know at that point was that Rufus Norris, my boss, has got form with not cancelling shows when actors are ill. And when he directed the tour of Cabaret, he ended up being on opposite Will Young for a week. He, Rufus, was playing a part in the show for a week because an actor was ill and there wasn't an understudy.
He told us this story and only said he was on for one night.
You should do some research to find out which of us is telling the truth. I think he definitely did more than one performance and he really enjoyed it. Yeah. Immediately, he came up to me and he said, "You've got to do it." I said, no. So we spent the afternoon ringing up every actor who was in the National Theatre ensemble who didn't in the rep at that time, who didn't have a show that night, asking them if they would go on with the script and play Phil McGinley's part. None of them would do it. Rufus was just standing there in the corner of the ring going, you're doing it. I was like, absolutely not. I acted at university and at school, and I stopped because I was terrible. It was really clear to me. I got into playwriting and dramaturgy because I wanted to work in the theatre and I couldn't act. So it is absolutely clear to me that I was not going on as Anne-Marie Duff's electrician lover in that evening's performance of Husbands and Sons. But then Rufus spoke to Marianne, and Marianne seemed to think it wasn't a terrible idea, which I thought was disastrous. And I got taken down to tell the company that I was going to do it. And they looked amused, and some of them, they were pleased that it wasn't being cancelled. Anne-Marie looked rightly very, very worried about the situation. And I started rehearsing, and I rehearsed for an hour and blocked the moves. And tried to decide whether I was going to do it in an accent, because the whole play is set in a very particular part of on the Nottinghamshire-Derbyshire border, where they have a very specific accent that they've all spent months learning how to do, and it's written in that, you can't avoid it. And actually, I started to get quite swept up in it, and I quite enjoyed the rehearsal. And I went and I shared a dressing room with some of the guys who were in the company, and I put on the blue electrician's boiler suit, and I was taking photos of myself in the mirror and sending them to my friends and my wife, and I was feeling really good about it. And then just before I went, we went down to the stage. Everyone banged on the windows in the dressing room block like they do on first nights, the famous National Theatre tradition. I was in tears. I couldn't believe it. I was finally going to get on stage at the National. It's amazing. All my university school dreams of being an actor was like swelling within me. And then we went down into the Dorfman and everything changed. And the company suddenly were off because they were in their own focused, attentive moment. And suddenly it was sort of pats on the back and have a good one, and they were gone. And I was standing there in the dark underneath the Dorfman stage, listening to Marianne give quite an awkward speech about how the writer was going to go on with the script to play a part and how sorry she was for the audience. And the light goes green and you're up this ramp and out onto the stage, into the Dorfman. And then I just sort of shouted my first line, so overexcited and terrible. It was awful. As the evening went on, I relaxed a bit more and I enjoyed it. I mean, I'm sure I was terrible, but by the end, I loved it. And when I took my bow, I was feeling like 8 foot tall. But I think it was probably pretty horrific for the audience. So that's the story of when I went on in Husbands and Sons.
We've all had times when we've had to put our minds to tasks where we feel completely out of our depth. The thing that gives me the most heart about Ben's story is the company around him being so supportive. When things start to go wrong, we often rely on the people around us to get through even the trickiest situations. Earlier this summer, we spoke to Kush Jumbo about this same thing while she was appearing in a show here, which also starred, coincidentally, Anne-Marie Duff.
Me and Anne-Marie were talking the other day about how, because, I mean, our show is very physical. There's a lot of fighting in it. And in the moment, sometimes you end up doing something by accident where you're terrified for the other person, like what you've just done, but you have to keep talking and you're trying to eyeball read the other person to know if they're hurt or if they're actually okay. I remember when I was doing As You Like It with an actress called Kelly Houghton, who's amazing, and we were having this like comedy fight in the letter scene, and we have this comedy fight and we're rolling around on the floor. And I was supposed to slam my hand on the floor on the letter, but instead I slam my hand on her boob. And we're rolling around on the floor. And so I go, and we're going, you know, Shakespeare, 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 Shakespeare. No, and I go, slam in her boob. And I suddenly completely drop out of character and go, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And she goes, it's fine. And then we continued and the whole audience just went bonkers. Because it's just in that split second, your real brain like is like, oh, like, are you okay? But then you just slip back in again, and we it just happens so fast. But I haven't had any really bad mishaps.
I mean, that's quite an impressive story, because something did go wrong and you literally dropped out of character. But yeah, then the impressive thing is that you then went back in straight away.
That really freaked me out, the way your body can just kind of like, you know, do that. But yeah, I mean, Anne-Marie kicked me over on stage the other night and... I kicked over and she said she heard my neck click when I went over, and she's screaming really angry words at me, but she was like stroking me with her hands like, are you okay, it's just spine broken. But she was like yelling at me like, you whore, like yelling at me, but she's like stroking me with her hands. And we were just laughing about how your body just has to kind of go against your mind in the moment. But yeah, it is that old phrase of the show must go on. You just do. You come on without the knife, you're going to stab someone with you. You just use your two fingers and you just believe it. And you know, our gun didn't go off the other night and we just looked at each other. And then I yelled in pain and fell to the floor and we sold it. You just sell it.
That's the great thing about acting. If the props don't work, you can just make it up. Of course, that only works if something that should happen doesn't. If something which shouldn't happen does happen, that's another story.
We were doing Troilus and Cressida in Trevor's first season up in the Olivier Theatre, and the guy who played Hector was huge, and he injured his back and had to go off. His understudy was not 6'8". He was a lot smaller. Now, Hector... obviously is famous for being slain in Troilus and Cressida, and this great big guy used to be laying back onto a large shield, and then by use of his legs he was dragged off to the back of the Olivier. Now The set was a palisade. It was swing doors with wooden posts between each one. I mean, it looked like something out of, you know, Time Team circa, I don't know, 10th century. And it was on a huge orange poppadom. It was a great big round orange floor. And the understudy was dutifully slain when he should have been, and one actor grabbed one leg, one grabbed the other, and there was a little bit of confusion because the guy was a lot smaller than the original, and they used to drag him off through one of these swing doors. Unfortunately, this night, one went one side of the post, the other went the other side of the post. You heard the scream in the circle, and suddenly Hector lived again, only to double up, and the whole of the Olivier Theatre was crying with laughter, and they finally dragged him off through the door, and he did dance around both his legs for a little while. It was hysterical, if slightly painful.
I can't even.
It's true.
Our episode's about disaster, failure, things going wrong. What lessons or principles do you think people out there could learn from your role as a stage manager and how you cope with the unexpected?
Prepare for everything and then expect what you haven't prepared for. And then that way you just... and remain calm when it happens.
Important thing is being calm.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that calmness is in very short supply when in a high-pressure situation something amiss happens.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Being the person that everyone looks at, calmness, I think, is one of the main things you must offer people.
Absolutely. But also, I think good humour, and I don't mean make a joke out of a tragedy, but if you can keep people enjoying themselves, because an actor can stop enjoying playing a part after 35, 40 performances, you've got to be a real people's person. You've got to be able to enjoy the pressure and turn it to the advantage of yourself, the show, and everyone else, and come in with a smile on your face and just go, I work at the National Theatre.
I asked Andrew for a worst case scenario. What would be the worst possible thing at the worst possible time?
Press night of the History Boys in the Littleton Theatre. We had a 7 o'clock up. 7 o'clock, 7:15.
That's the original History Boys.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Original. Used to be 7:45 up. So it was probably a 7:15 press night, because they're always early so they can get their copy in. And at about 6 o'clock, I walked onto the stage and I thought, it's misty in here. And I looked up into the fly tower and I could see a cloud just hanging in the fly tower. And, of course, it was a little bit of smoke, but mainly the sprinklers had already gone off and the water was falling. And as I stood there, as I opened my mouth, I got soaked. The sprinklers went off over the whole stage. And I immediately phoned and said, turn off the sprinklers. We're soaking the stage. You've got press night, blah, blah, blah. Oops. Everyone came running. And we spent a very long time clearing up the water. The whole of the lighting rig was drenched. The floor was drenched. Luckily, most of the props were pushed further off. So it was the stage area. We went up around about, I think, about 8:45. I don't know. I haven't seen the show report since that night. It was completely soaked. We'd cleaned it up. Everyone turned up. It was amazing. The National Theatre really pulled together and got that show on that night. In fact, I remember a couple of the cast who had sort of multiple family in from all over the country in tears going, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I said, it will. Just calm down. It'll be all right. We'll get it on. And I wasn't stage manager at that time. It was Trish Montemiro, but we kept it together, and it was a monumental effort. We got it on, and it seemed to go all right.
Yeah, I've heard good things about the History Boys. I heard it went down quite well.
Yeah, just a bit. Great reviews and 5-star everywhere, and the rest is History Boys.
Hey. Being a stage manager is a very specific job.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about what, if you didn't work in theatre, what you would be doing?
Yes. I can't imagine not doing what I do. One is helping realise plays on stage that will live forever. You just get to work on the world's best theatre. The crew here, the technicians here are fabulous, and everyone wants it to be right. And when it goes wrong, you can bet your bottom dollar they are working overtime to get it right at that moment. Mm. And if it's an overnight fix, I mean, the amount of nights that have been lost to make sure things are fine. But, you know, we put on a lot of plays here, so invariably things will go wrong. But this is not the norm. And even when, you know, the sky falls in, you go, well, at least it's the National Theatre sky, it's this show's sky, and we'll rebuild it for tomorrow night, and it'll be fine. It's a joy. There's nothing better. I couldn't imagine doing anything else. Seriously.
Not everything in life goes according to plan. Accidents happen to everyone in every walk of life. Nobody's perfect, and we all make mistakes. When they happen, you just have to get up and deal with them, and try not to let them get you down. If you're having a bad day, I hope you'll think of that story about the History Boys and picture a young James Corden, Dominic Cooper, Russell Tovey, and all the rest of the cast mopping a stage for an hour and a half. Stuff goes wrong sometimes, even to movie stars. That's it for our show today. I've had a blast. I hope you have too. I'm sure you all have stories about times you've seen stuff go wrong on stage. Please share them with us. We'd love to hear them. Especially if you were in Southampton and saw Rufus Norris duet with Will Young. I have to hear how that was. You can talk to us on Twitter with the hashtag NTPodcast and find us there and on Facebook and Instagram at National Theatre. I'm on Twitter at Samuel Sedgman. Please get in touch and tell us what you thought of the show. If you want to show your appreciation, please take the time to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps us rise in the charts and helps new people find the show. It really does make a difference, and we're grateful for all the ones you've given us so far, so please do keep them coming. As ever, this episode was produced and edited by the incomparable Emma Reedy and was presented and co-produced by me, the very comparable Sam Sedgman, with support from our lovely social content editor, Nick Mulligan. Our executive producer was Kate Moore, and our music was by Alex Painter. A huge thank you to the legendary Andrew Speed for sitting down with us for this episode, and to all the rest of our contributors from throughout the series so far. We're going to be taking a break for a few weeks while we work on some new stories. If there's something you'd like to hear us talk about on the show, do get in touch and let us know. We are always on the hunt for new ideas, and if you have one, please do tell us. But for now, that's everything. Have a great day, and I'll see you soon.